Okay, we're going to take a final hour of phone calls with Judica Illis as we talk about her latest work, The Encyclopedia of Mystics, Saints, and Sages, but we'll also take some of your stories as well on Coast to Coast AM. But you also, Judica, recommend things that people can do without having to go through a saint, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So,
absolutely. There are many.
Give us some techniques.
Well, there are two options in terms of magic.
All right.
One, for people who appreciate working with spiritual entities, if you don't want to work with saints, and one way to think about saints, I think especially for people who are unfamiliar with them, if you think about ghosts, and we know we see ghosts on television all the time now, all these ghost hunters, saints are supremely powerful, helpful ghosts. You know, beyond, you know, we always see the harmful, scary ghosts. Saints are the friend, you know, Casper exponentially.
Right.
The really, really friendly, helpful ghosts. And then you also have all kinds of spiritual entities, including some helpful ghosts, that have nothing to do with saints. They're all different types of spirits. But then you can have magical practices that have nothing to do with spirituality. You're working with plants, you're working with pictures, you're working with numbers. The power of words is incredibly powerful. And if what we were discussing was belief before, but one of the gifts of magic spells, even if none of your spells work, it will teach you to really, really pay attention to your own words and what people are saying to you. Because curses don't have to be formal. If you live with people or you work with people and they are always telling you, oh, you can't do that, you don't know how to do that, you are incapable of doing that, you will never lose weight, you will never stop drinking, you're just like your father. Negative things like that, those are curses.
Well, even when you go up to a little kid, right?
Yeah.
What do parents normally say when the kid's got a glass of milk in their head? Don't spill that.
Yeah.
Well, what do? They spill it.
You're going to fall.
You've already set them up.
Yeah. Before you get the slide, you're going to fall.
Yep.
You know, you start to run, you're going to fall. You try to ride your bike, you're going to fall. And what do? You fall. Versus people who make you feel good, who have confidence in you, who believe that you can actually accomplish something. It is one of the reasons why it is so important to be with positive people who want the best for you and who express that.
Instead of these energy zappers.
Yeah, but that verbal expression, you are creating reality. And one of the things you do with a magic spell is you create reality and you recreate reality. Let's say your reality is not, you know, it's not what you want it to be. You take your magic spell and you create it. That's why you really need to have a picture in your mind of what you want reality to be. Because if you don't have that goal, the spell kind of falls apart. It's floppy. You need to have that nice focus of what you actually want to accomplish. And, you know, you have, you know, from get to point, you're at point A and you want to get to point B. But you have to sort of see point B, even if you're not there yet. A lot of the easiest spells are just cast with words. They will not cost you anything. You don't have to buy lots of expensive equipment or materials. It's just the power of words. Do you want an easy money spell?
Yeah. That people can use?
Yeah.
Okay. And then we'll take some calls. Go ahead.
This is really easy. It's the money mantra. All you have to do is say or write, a money miracle happens to me today.
You just say that?
I know somebody who said it every time she was stopped at a red light. Every time she was stopped at a red light, she just chanted until the light changed. You can say it when you get up in the morning. You can say it, you know, you can say it once. I know people who will write it 10 times a day, like, you know.
Well, that's like an affirmation. You know, our numbers lady, you've
it,
heard of
it. It's a very fine line between an affirmation and a spell.
Yeah.
Affirmations are spells for people who don't like spells.
Right.
You know, the secret. This is spell casting for people who don't want to think of themselves as spell casters.
Well, let's go to Brian in Simi Valley, California. Welcome to the program, Brian. Go ahead.
Oh, God, I'm so glad that I'm finally able to tell this to somebody.
Sure.
And by the way, I know of Father Dick DiIorio. My mother spoke of him all the time. God rest his soul. She was amazed at the things he did. Anyway, I'm a devout Catholic my whole life. And I had a house in Tucson, and I had to sell it right away, and because I had work in California. And a lady across the street told me about the Saint Joseph.
Joseph.
And I said, you got to be kidding me. Why would I take a perfectly good holy statue and put it in the ground? And she said, believe me, this will work for you. So I did. I mean, I had a for sale sign on my house. There was nothing special about my house. There was no reason why it should sell. There was other houses around it for sale. It sold in 3 weeks.
That's amazing.
And then three years ago, I had a motorhome, and I was in trouble, and I had to get rid of it. And it was a lot of money. And I thought, wait a minute, what about that thing with the statues? But I can't bury it. How am I going to bury it in a motorhome? So the best thing that I could think of was to put, I had two of them, St. Joseph's. So I put one on each in, you know, the pockets on the door. Mm-hmm. I put one upside down in each pocket on each door. I sold it within a month.
Wow.
And I swear to you, I know it was that. And if I hadn't been, that woman hadn't told me that, I mean, I have the rosary in my hand right now.
And you got the money, Brian, you wanted?
Yes, exactly what I paid for it. I got
wow.
for that motorhome.
That's a good deal.
The house, I can't. I was so upside down on that thing. I was just so glad to get rid of it.
Yeah.
But the motorhome, I got exactly what I put into it, and it was 3 years ago too, when it was really bad. And
yeah.
Everybody said, "Oh, you're never going to sell that." There was no way. I knew I couldn't, and I did that, and it sold. And I'm so grateful. And for all you non-believers out there, please, hey, you should believe, because, you know, he shouldn't have to perform miracles. He shouldn't have to. You should believe. He ain't asking you nothing. It ain't costing you nothing. So believe. That's all you have to do is believe. And he believes in you.
There's a great story. It does happen. I wonder, some people take the statues with them, Judica.
Right.
Others just keep them in the ground.
You know, this tradition, the tradition with St. Joseph, it's not recent.
Why do you put him in upside down, by the way? I don't know about that.
Oh, because that is a magical thing. It is done with other saints, too. It is to make them work a little harder. You make them uncomfortable.
You put them on their head, of course they're going to work a little harder.
Do you know what villages used to do with statues of St. Peter?
What?
St. Peter, reputedly, will bring the rain if there's a drought. And so if there was a drought, they would, you know, take, I mean, and this is, entire communities would do this. They would take the statue of St. Peter out of the church and, you know, march him through the fields, bring him back to the church. If it didn't work, if the drought didn't break pretty quickly, they would take the statue of St. Peter and throw him in the local river to let him feel the water that they needed. He wasn't getting the message. So turning him upside down is a method of letting Joseph know that you really have a problem and you really need him to do this quickly. It for what this is worth, some realtor didn't make this up. This is a tradition that goes back centuries.
A skeptic would say this is just, you know, being superstitious.
What can I tell you?
Mm.
But a skeptic isn't going to believe no matter what.
No, of course not.
So it doesn't matter.
Until they do it and sell their house.
That's right.
Next up, we go to Houston, Texas. Susan's turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi, thank you, George.
Sure,
thank
you're welcome.
I have a different St. Joseph of Cupertino for the
yes.
exam.
Yes. Flying Friar.
Amazing. And the Flying Saint. My daughter was a 4.0 in her undergrad, went to UT Law, and just was a shoe that didn't fit. Really hard time. In fact, they even sat her down and said she may want to consider another, you know, way of life than law. So she did graduate with good marks, but not as she is normally exemplary. Married her husband and moved to New York. So now she's confronted with the New York bar as an average law student. So I told her, and she's agnostic. I told her about the prayer, and I emailed it to her, and I have been saying it for months along with my family, who are all Catholic, but I'm Christian. So I asked her to say the prayer with me over the phone, and of course she's like, whatever, and she did. And we did it twice, and lo and behold, she passed the New York bar on the very first time. And I'm supposed to, in thank you to St. Joseph, is to testify. Yes, exactly. And I couldn't figure out how, and I couldn't afford an ad in the paper, and I've been telling as many people as I can. So I thank you both for tonight for allowing this to be on the air.
Thank you. I have something for you to tell your daughter. Do you know why? There's a reason for Joseph of Cupertino. He is traditionally invoked for help with exams, for help for students. And the reason is that he himself was not a good student.
Right.
He was a very poor student. And
yes.
In the theories, he understands what it means to have to really study. He
Absolutely.
Understands what, as opposed to saying like Albertus Magnus, who, was a genius at age 10. Joseph of Cupertino gets the anxiety of an exam.
You know, Judica, I've told people who, when they hear the word witchcraft, they panic.
Yeah.
And Wicca, which deals with the belief in a male-female god.
Yes, exactly.
These are nice people.
Oh, yeah.
I know a lot of them. They're not evil. I think people confuse Wicca with Satanism, and they shouldn't.
No, absolutely. First of all, most Wiccans don't even acknowledge the existence of Satan, let alone worship him. There is absolutely no relation.
And they don't worship him.
No.
But people confuse that. When you talk about a black mass, people think they're witches that do that.
There was a point in France around the time of the Revolution and afterwards, where there were people performing black masses. In general, they were priests. I mean, that is the interesting thing, is that a lot of grimoires, which are magical book of rituals, a lot of the more disreputable ones, were written by priests and theology students. They were the ones who had the information. They were the ones who could read Latin. They had the access to the materials, to the churches, to the things. In order to be a Satanist, you have to acknowledge that Christian perception of the devil.
True.
And so other religions, you may disapprove of them, but they're not Satanists.
But a Satanist really does want to conjure up evil.
It's not really my specialty.
Well, that's
that
good.
I don't know.
You'd worry me if you were. Let's go west of the Rockies, Anaheim. Rick, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Rick.
I'm enjoying the program. I want to acknowledge a couple things real quick up front. I was raised Catholic. I'm now born-again Christian.
Okay.
The other thing, I don't claim to have done a lot of research like your guest host, I'm just an average person. But I have a quick little story that I want to share with you.
Please, yeah.
And then a comment. I worked with this young girl, about my age, in Anaheim, actually out in Orange County, for a number of months, and we got to be pretty close friends at work. She was married. I had a crush on her. I had given her my phone number. I knew where she lived because one night I thought she was following me home, but she actually lived near me. Anyway, so I had a general idea of where she lived. And for quite a while, I always wanted to go by and maybe stop at her house and say hi to her, but I never did because I knew she was married, right? One afternoon, something just kind of like compelled me to go over there. I don't know why. I just said, you know what? I'm going to go over there. I was nearby. I drove over there. And right as I found the house, okay, because I'm like looking at the addresses, and right as I pull up and I realize this is the house, she comes running out of the house, okay, in a panic, crying, and I kind of stopped the car, and she saw my car, recognized me, and she says, quick, let me in, and I said, oh, sure, yeah, and I was kind of like caught off guard. I stopped the car, she jumps in the car, and I said, what's going on? She says, quick, get out of here. My husband was hitting me, or he was, really upset, and he was about to hit her or something, you know. So I said, wow, you know. So I take off, and she's in the car with me now, and I'm thinking, what is going on here, you know? Because when I went over there, I thought I was going over for my own motivations or intent, you know. And
you were the miracle.
In that instant, I realized God was using me to help her. Okay, and right there at that instant, it just was overpowering and overwhelming, knowing that I was being used to help somebody that I really liked. Okay, so I helped her, and she mentioned to me as we were driving off, I said, well, didn't anybody else offer to help you get out of the house? She says, no, I thought about calling you, but I didn't know where your number was or something. You know, she did think about calling me, though, but I could not have timed that any better. If I had wanted to, for any amount of money in the world, to pull up right at that moment, right when she needed help, to jump in my car. So the point here is that I feel like God uses people who are faithful, who surrender themselves to his will, to do his work, okay? But I don't claim the credit for that. So it kind of disturbs me sometimes when I hear people, like, there again, remember, I was raised Catholic, and I have a lot of relatives that pray to saints and have their houses full of saints. It kind of disturbs me when I hear people, you know, saying that saint is the one that healed. That saint is the one that, you know, gets the credit. And he did this and he did that. And let's give him the glory. But, you know, he was used by God. Okay. He healed somebody, you know, on God's behalf.
All right. What do you think of that, Judica?
Yeah, actually, you could argue that saints are those souls who surrender themselves to God, exactly as you said, to be used by God. I mean, you're right. The fact that people say that the fact that people say it, it's not the saint's fault. In just the same way that if somebody said that it was your credit, and they, you know, you're a hero and it's your power, they can say whatever they want. You know what's true. So how people interpret it, that's up to them. I mean, what you're describing, how you describe it with the saints being vehicles of God's love and energy, that is exactly what doctrine says. That's how it's supposed to be interpreted. You know, and you could argue that people often don't understand that or don't have the capacity to understand that. They can only see what they see in front of them, which is why a lot of people associate saints with idolatry. You know, they see the statues and they see the misperceptions. But be that as it may, whether and from a magical perspective, somebody might argue that the two of you, you and this young woman, had a mental connection.
Well, that's always a possibility, too. We're coming right back with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we are with Judica Illis. Judica, what are you going to work on next after the series of these books?
I want to get out of the house.
Please.
I really would like to get out of the house a little bit. I'm teaching in Baltimore this weekend. I wrote 4 encyclopedias in less than 10 years. And I have spent a lot of time sitting at a keyboard, so I would like to get out of the house and
do
actually
what?
Get to see some human beings. But I have half a book on angels. So I do have half a book on angels that I would like to do that some...
Finish that up.
Yeah, well, they would kind of complete the trilogy. I've got the spirits and the saints. It would be nice to have the angels. I have a number of half-completed books that I'd like to, you know, hopefully one day finish up and actually publish.
But you need a little break.
Oh, yeah. It's nice to actually get some sunshine.
How'd you get started doing this?
I fell into it. My first book is actually a book on fertility and infertility because that applied very specifically to my own situation. I had my own fertility issue, and I started looking for solutions other than a fertility clinic. So saints, a lot of saints are associated with helping women conceive, and spirits and herbs and all kinds of traditional physical therapies, Ayurveda and you know, Kenpo, which is Japanese herbalism. And even after I had, you know, I am my own testimony. I have two kids, but it hooked me. And so I kept researching and researching, and I finally didn't know what I was going to do with all this information, and I finally wrote it up in a manuscript and sent it out to a publisher, and there was a chapter of magic spells in there, and they did not want the entire book. I would actually like to publish that book one day. But they liked the chapter of magic spells and asked if I could enlarge it into a more general book, you know, not just magic spells for fertility, but magic, you know, how do you cast a magic spell? And that became my first book, which is called Pure Magic, and which is available. And, you know, one book led to another. And, you know, I had started collecting magic spells. At the time that I was searching for fertility, I would come across all these really interesting magic spells.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and so I collected them. And, you know, literally I did fall into this. And one book led to the other. I wrote a book on spells, and then that led to a book on witchcraft. And a lot of spells incorporate spirits. So then that book led to the Encyclopedia of Spirits. And here we are today.
Okay, let's go to the final calls.
Thank you.
We'll go to Ed in Los Angeles. There you go, Ed.
Hi there.
Hi.
It's interesting you mentioned the angels, because I read a book years ago called Ask Your Angel.
Yes,
and
it's a great book.
It's kind of like all sorts of angels that can help you for whatever it is you're looking for. I was calling because your guest mentions these miracles that can't be proven, and it's hard to do this and that. But what about the ones that can, or one in particular that seems to pop up? And now that it's 2011, you would think somebody has an answer to it. It's where you have these statues of saints and Mary
yeah.
and all that cry or pour water from various areas.
Yeah, the bleeding tears.
Yeah, because I've never heard a single instance where they've said we've taken the liquid and then analyzed it.
I think they have.
Really? Because
yeah.
a lot of them come up with, well, it's just water vapor from the area that it's positioned in. Another one would say somebody put this on it, but they're never really saying we analyzed
well,
it, we found it's real blood, or it's...
Usually two things happen. Either they disprove it right away, they figure out, it, you know, it was a trick and, you know, it wasn't real.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can't determine what happened.
Well, I mean, with all the science that we have now.
There are reputedly stories, and I mean, if you can look them up online, there are reputedly stories where... they claim that the lab came back and said it was blood or was tears.
Mm.
Problem becomes that is too fantastic to be accepted for, you know, for a lot of people.
Mm.
And so what do you do? You know, how did the
Well, I've never heard
there?
Them say that they've actually taken it to be examined. And most of the time I hear it saying, okay, we sectioned that area off and it's there for people to come now and worship, but we're not going to get too...
You know, the Vatican actually disavows a lot of these.
Right.
The Vatican has historically not liked these sort of more controversial, more scandalous stories. They prefer the simpler faith issues. There is a statue. It is not a Catholic statue. It is in Korea. It is, I believe, a statue of the Buddha Saint Kuan Yin. And it's a statue. And yet it's growing plants from its head. And no one, and the plants are there, and they're clearly plants, and,
yeah.
you know, they're identified as plants.
Straight out of the statue.
Yeah, they can't figure out how it's happening.
tell me about the Mexican saint.
Santa Muerte.
Yeah.
Santa Muerte, Saint Death, is very controversial. There was a National Geographic article about her last year. She's a skeleton saint. Saint Death, her name literally means Saint Death, and the Vatican has, you know, tried to shut her down for years.
Why?
For a lot of reasons. Unofficial saints, those who are not canonized, at the most prosaic, they take revenue away from official shrines. You know, if people are going and buying their gifts from the gift shop of the unofficial saint, then they're not doing it from the canonized saint.
I see.
I mean, you know, there is an economic issue.
Tell me, is that big business?
Yeah, very big business. Pilgrimages are huge.
Really?
Virgin of Guadalupe in December, millions come to see her, lords.
And how many buy? Lots?
Yeah, I mean, if you think, even if people come and they buy just, you know, a medal for a couple dollars, if millions of people are doing it.
Oh, man, don't tell me it's all about money, Judah.
You know, pilgrimages and saints, it's a lot about money. There is an economic basis to a lot of this. Canonized saints, you know, they get the seal of approval, and pilgrims come.
Do you believe that Lourdes in France has medicinal purposes and cures and heals?
They have never found therapeutic minerals in that water, unlike other springs, because there are springs where they, you know, they can test the chemicals,
right,
and they can see what's in them. I don't believe that they have ever discovered what, if anything, is in the water at Lourdes. There are people who were healed or claim to be healed. You know, there are.
Well,
you know,
to me, that would be important. I mean, if they would say, there's nothing in the water that we believe would help heal people, but they're being healed, and we don't know why. That's a story.
Well, that is the story, exactly. That is exactly the story. They don't know. And who's to say that there isn't something in the water that we just don't know how to test yet?
Good point.
You know, it's possible in 50 years we'll be able to determine what's in the water. But that water was not there until St. Bernadette dug it up.
Right.
So, I mean, you could look at that as a miracle because she was, you know, she was a very young girl.
It was a spring,
not educated,
right?
And yet she dug up this spring that all these people claim have healed them. So right away, that's an amazing story.
Let's go to Manhattan. George is with us, east of the Rockies. Hey, good morning, George.
Yes, George, you're the chancellor of Coast to Coast University.
Yes, I am.
And tonight is the most joyful program I've listened to in the last 20 years.
Wow.
Okay? I'm retired. I was born before World War II. And Judica, you're the reason for the joy tonight. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay. Urs von Balthasar, he was a Jesuit, a historian, was going to make the cardinal. He died before he became a cardinal, but they said, you know, okay, in heaven he'll get the hat. But he wrote The Truth is Symphonic, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a musician and geologist, and I have a pontifical degree in theology. You are right on the mark. And one thing about the upside-down statue, I got 500 things I want to say to you, but
email me.
Oh, no. And
but you only get two.
Okay. But one is the Joseph statue upside down?
Yeah.
Okay. How about St. Peter, when he was going to be dragged and crucified, he was crucified upside down, the rock of the church.
Ah, good point.
How do you like that?
Good point.
Okay. Judica, you are, well, and remember, there's another book. Well, I've got about 50 books, 100 books here in my apartment. Saints of the Old Testament. I mean, there was a guy that called before about Samuel.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Saints are saints. I mean, it doesn't matter what religion. And guess what? In Medjugorje, I went over there two times. You know, Our Lady of Medjugorje, mm-hmm. I mean, Queen of Peace. I mean, I know Fatima and Lourdes and stuff. And by the way, the water, when you're looking for chemicals, I'm a geologist too. You don't have to buy trace elements. When you look at a molecule of water, 99% of it is empty. It's pure vacuum. It's only energy. I mean, oh, come on. We were created before time, before the universe. And, oh, I rest my case.
Yeah, all right, Georgie. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. I don't know if you know Dr. Emoto. He takes water, freezes it, cuts a little slab of it, and looks under a microscope. What he does is he plays good music at it, or what one would call bad music, all right? And when you play bad music, the condition of the frozen water looks horrible. Yet when you play great music or something a little more comfortable to listen to, it looks sparkly. I'm wondering if he's ever done this with the water from Lourdes. and just looked at it under a microscope in his frozen condition.
He should.
He should?
Yeah.
I would guess it would look phenomenal.
An awful lot of saints are associated with springs and wells. And that is a very, very common tradition. Lourdes is just the most famous. So that would really be a very interesting thing to study.
Let's go to Sabrina in the state of Washington. Hi, Sabrina. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you very much, George.
Sure.
I wanted to comment to your guest that I think she's doing excellent work. I'm Wiccan, and I am a high priest, third degree, Alexandrian.
Yes.
And one of the things that I think is cool is that you wrote stuff about witchcraft, and I've seen people misuse it, and I watch the consequences because they come really fast, and I think that anyways, I was just going to ask one question.
Yeah, go ahead.
George, this is directed to you.
Okay.
Where can I get my book published?
Well, it all depends on what kind of a book it is. Sabrina, I don't want to eat up the remaining few minutes on that. Send me an email, and I'll send you some thoughts. Tell me what you've written, and I'll give you a couple ideas, okay? George@coasttocoastam.com. We go to Butte, Montana. Joshua's with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Josh.
Okay. I had a question for Judica.
Yep.
Hi.
Judica, hi. I've actually got witches after me. And they're stealing my energy, I think, is one of the main things, and making things very uncomfortable for me. Excuse me, it's hard for me to talk about this sometimes.
How do you know they're witches and not just psychic vampires, Josh?
I'm not really sure what a psychic vampire is, but I call them witches or sorcerers or energy vampires.
A psychic vampire would suck your energy. A witch is using some sort of a magical spell to do it.
But a witch probably wouldn't want to do this to him, wouldn't it? I mean, this is not like the gingerbread witch.
There are people. Either way, have you asked Michael Archangel for help? Michael Archangel is the defender. He's an angel. You know, you can think of him as a saint. You can think of him as an angel. He's the angel with the flaming sword. Ask him to put a wall of protection around you.
Give him some quick advice here, then.
Visualize yourself. I'll give you an invocation. It's easy. All you have to do is say it. Michael to the right of me, Michael to the left of me, Michael above me, Michael below me, Michael within me, Michael all around me. Michael, with your flaming sword of cobalt blue, protect me today, and see yourself inside that circle, that flaming circle of protection. And you can do that whenever you feel vulnerable. It shores up your aura, and it gives you a psychic defense. And that's a good start. Because it puts a barrier between you and somebody who might be pursuing you aggressively.
Do you have a lot of these incantations in your work, the Encyclopedia of Mystics?
Yeah. That one is actually an Encyclopedia of 5,000 Spells. Variations of that are the Encyclopedia of Spirits. Michael Archangel, I mean, if you are afraid, he is the saint to call on. He is just, he's humanity's defender. That's his job, to protect you.
Let's go to Lacey in Hawaii. Hello, Lacey. Go ahead.
Hi to all of you.
Hi.
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 Hi. When my daughter was 2 years old, my husband, this woman, wanted him, right? Well, she, without my knowledge, cut my daughter's hair, and my daughter was murdered.
Wow.
2 years later at 4, and what's amazing about this, the 27th now in Hawaii time, and this is the 17th anniversary of that murder.
Did they ever catch the person?
Yes, yes.
It wasn't that lady, was it?
No, no. But, you know, I think she got the wheels. Whoops, I got a siren going by here.
No, it sounds like they're going after somebody as we speak.
Yeah, exactly. But I think she sent the wheels in motion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people are very careful with their hair.
That's,
you know,
pure evil, though.
Their nail pairings. My father would never, leave his, when you trim your nails, never leave your nail pairings around because,
gross. Who would want to do that anyway?
Well, it's an old, because, you don't put it in the garbage where somebody could take it out. It's an old folkloric. I mean, he was taught this in childhood.
What did he do with them?
It's an old folkloric thing that with the parts of your body, you become vulnerable to other people.
Huh.
And that's a fairly, you know, universal old folk belief, superstition, to be very, very careful with nail clippings, bits of your hair falling out, things like that.
It's an old country tradition in the Middle East to keep a little part of the umbilical cord.
Mm-hmm.
And when it falls off from the baby at a certain point.
A lot of people bury it and keep it secret.
Yeah, they do. Judica, we're out of time. Your book's coming out when?
October.
October. So we got you on way early, but...
Pre-order.
Can you pre-order?
My publisher happy.
Can they get it from Amazon?
Yes, they can, and there's a good price now.
They really discount, don't they?
Yeah, the pre-orders are sometimes... And they don't charge you till the book comes out. So you're just sort of... locking in.
Exactly. You're just lining it up while you can. All right. That's Judica Illis, the book, The Encyclopedia of Mystics, Saints, and Sages. And we're going to do this all again tomorrow. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.